This is the Rock and Roll Autopsy Podcast.
All right, I'm going to zap her again. Charge up the paddles. Come on, let's go.
Sorry, Doctor.
Hold the compressions.
Clear.
Straight line.
Good evening and welcome to Rock and Roll Autopsy. We are the Forensic Files on your radio dial. My name is Scott, and if we got a great show for you tonight, no, we don't. Damn it, the phone is ringing again. It's the request line. All right, let's pick it up. WRNRA, East of the Rockies. Hey, breather, what's going on, man? You fallen deep down the rabbit hole of tinfoil hat conspiracy theories and radical dark web extremism? Oh, man, be careful with that stuff. You can't believe everything you read. What do you mean you can say that again because you once actually read a good review for our shitty podcast? Listen, you called the request line. Is there a song you'd like us to perform an autopsy on? Spreading the Disease by Queensryche? You got it. All right, buckle up, gang. The subject of our rock and roll autopsy tonight will be Spreading the Disease by prog metalers Queensryche. We'll get the show started after these very important messages from our sponsors.
Here's another KFMQ 102 concert event.
Hello?
Queensryche, the Building Empires Tour, the ultimate visual experience.
The Building Empire.
Can you feel it? Tonight at Civic Auditorium, performing for the first time the entire Operation Mindcrime, on stage for over 2 hours. The massive live Queensryche production collides with extraordinary film footage, plus the arena debut of Suicidal Tendencies. Tickets at the Civic Auditorium, all Homer's Records, Pickles Records, Dix, Rosenblatt Stadium, or charge at 402-342-7107. Tonight, 7:30 at Civic Auditorium. Queensryche, a contemporary presentation.
Breaking news!
What is this garbage you're watching?
I want to watch the news.
This is the news.
All right, gang, we've got our intrepid rock and roll beat reporter, Rico Gnu, on the line with the good news. Rico, how are you, sir?
I'm doing pretty damn good tonight. How about yourself, Mr. R?
Not too shabby, dude. Just ready for some rock and roll news. Got to know what's going on out there. I've been working a lot, just slaving away all summer. I've been living under a rock. I don't know what the hell's going on in the world of music.
How much do you... Let me ask you this. How much Buck Cherry have you ever listened to? Ever?
Only They Do the Crazy Bitch song, right?
Is that Buck Cherry? That is Buck Cherry, right?
I think that's Buck Cherry.
Okay. Okay. So have you listened to anything besides that one song of theirs? Honestly.
They Love the Cocaine too, right? Is that their
song? Is that also Buck Cherry?
I think so, yeah.
The point is, they're just like one or two songs that people really know, right?
Yeah.
Do you know who the lead singer is? Do you know his name?
Oh, shit. I know he's got the neck tattoos and the spiky, like, you know, Ron Wood hair.
He's really inked up, like, a lot.
Yeah.
Yes, for sure.
But I don't remember his name.
His name is Josh Todd, by the way. So, but the point is,
he's got two first names.
See, now that's a problem. When you have two first names, or if you're like Jan Michael Vincent and have three first names, that's an issue. Anytime you've got like your entire name is comprised of first names, it's like problem with me. Agree. Anyway, so Josh, our good man, Loudwire is just the gift that keeps on giving, Scott. I love going there. This article is by Philip Trapp. It's an article about the things that Josh Todd has said about the state of music nowadays. First, and we'll talk about that, and then I'm going to ask you about that. Josh Todd says that rock music is just not dangerous anymore, Scott. Rock music is not dangerous anymore.
And you want my feedback on this?
Yeah, he said, but when he says dangerous, I'm going to quote this. When I say dangerous, I don't mean I'm Josh Todd now. I'm Jan Michael Vincent. When I say dangerous, I don't mean using foul language or saying that kind of stuff. There's no one separating the pack. So what he says, and I'm going to expound on this in a second, when he says that rock is not dangerous, he means there's no one separating the pack. I don't know how that means danger to me or in rock music, but let's keep going. Back in the day, every band had personalities and they all were separate from each other because of that, even though they were in one genre of music. Are you following this?
Okay, good.
He adds, I can give a good example. The last decade where there were rock stars in the 90s. Look how many amazing frontmen you had. You had Layne Staley, Chris Cornell, Kurt Cobain, Eddie Vedder, and Zach De La Rocha. All these guys were just in a league of their own. And every one of these bands was different. So when you hear them, you knew it was them. Since like 2000, it hasn't been like that on rock radio. Staying with me on this?
I'm with you.
Okay. You listen to any kind of new rock radio, and it sounds like to me, this is just my opinion. This is Josh Todd saying it's his opinion. It just sounds like one consecutive band for 45 minutes, and you don't know who anyone is, and you don't know anybody's name. There's no guitar heroes. There's no frontman. Now, that's the first fucking sensible thing that he said in this article so far, in my opinion. So then finally, it's like, as far as rock is concerned, I think since the 2000s, it's been forgettable, kind of like faceless. There's no rock stars. There's no guitar stars. There's no rock singers. So he says rock's not dangerous anymore. And he says that's because there's no notable frontmen and all the music kind of sounds the same. So I'm trying to. This article, like, I want to be interested in what this guy is saying, but it's kind of like throwing darts in the dark. You know what I'm saying? So do you have an opinion on this? Because I think there are a couple of spots in here where he kind of makes a little bit of sense, but then he doesn't at the same time. And I just want you to help me wrap my mind around this.
Well, okay. Let me hold on a second while I step off of Josh Todd's lawn.
Exactly. Jesus. Uncle Stan. Well, I gotta change his name to Uncle Stan. Well, back in the day, we had some real rock stars, and you guys don't have any rock stars nowadays. You guys all fucking music sounds the same. Sounds like 45 minutes of music. There's no guitar heroes. He's just like my Uncle Stan.
Yeah, listen, Uncle Stan and Josh Todd go way back. Okay, well, here's where apparently I'm gonna blow some minds here. Are you sitting down, Rico?
Firmly implanted into my director's chair.
All right. I think he's right. I mean, this is where I'm gonna just sound old and out of touch, but yeah, I think that rock has been really nondescript and has lacked personalities, which I think it's not so much the music. You know, also maybe hasn't been as good in my opinion, but I'm sure people could point me in the direction of good music. But I think largely what's missing are characters. I don't think there are many characters anymore, and they're not very interesting people fronting these bands, and a lot of the bands just don't have a lot of personality. And so yeah, I think that's a very good point on from his, you know, perspective.
I actually share that
perspective.
I agree with that. Who is one of the most popular rock bands right now? Still Foo Fighters, whether you like it or not. They're really popular right now. You want to know why? Because Dave Grohl is a personality. He is. He's got a personality. He's likable. He's interesting. He tells good stories. And that's why they're really popular right now.
See, I would kind of disagree. I think Dave is kind of like, I think he's kind of the embodiment of the anti-personality. I mean, Dave could be anybody's dad. I mean, there's nothing interesting about Dave Grohl. Literally, when I drop my girls off at school in the morning, I see half a dozen Dave Grohls waiting in line with me.
Okay. All right.
Dave comes when my plumbing needs repairs. Dave comes to my house and fixes the plumbing. When I go to Whole Foods and I get in line to pay for my groceries, Dave's waiting the register. Hey Dave, what's going on? When I drop my girls off of school, Dave Grohl is there. When we go to the pool on a July afternoon, I see half a dozen Dave Grohls walking around the pool. I mean, Dave is to me kind of the embodiment of the personality-less movement in rock music. And
all right,
to me,
so let me think about that. Who's got personality nowadays that's under the age of 50 or 60 in rock? Nobody in rock, right? I mean, all the personalities are in other genres of music.
I mean, Wolfgang is having success, but he's a lot like another Dave Grohl. He's kind of the everyman. And I think that the everyman is kind of the exact opposite of what's needed in rock music right now. To give rock music a kick in the pants, you need someone who's got some flair, some kind of something, some kind of charisma. You almost need like a David Lee Roth to come along, just some wackadoodle kind of personality to kind of mix things up a little bit, you know?
Yeah, dude, do you know how I see the state of rock music nowadays? A bunch of people on YouTube, like every single guitar player on YouTube, can play everything. They copy everybody. Everybody can play Eruption. Like nine-year-old kids that can barely hold the guitar are playing Eruption, and they're playing Petrucci, and they're playing all of those guys in like little six-year-old kids who can barely hold the drumsticks, can barely reach the drum set, are ripping off Mike Portnoy and all that shit. And we have a bunch of really talented parroted musicians, but no music makers. We have a bunch of musicians, but no music makers. And that's the problem. Nobody makes music. People just play instruments. And there's a big difference right now with people who are playing instruments versus people who are making music. And that's not happening right now.
It's interesting because some of those people have some pretty like outlandish personas that they take on their YouTube channels or on TikTok. And so they've developed characters that they are online when they're giving their guitar lessons, or when they're like, there's this one dude who, the guy who got into it with Kirk Hammett, his YouTube channel is hilarious. He's been doing these things lately where he writes like an entire Megadeth album in a day, an entire Metallica album in a day. And he's funny. He's funny. He's talented. He's got charisma and he's got, you know, a personality. I can't remember the guy's name, but there's a bunch of them online. There's a bunch of them. I mean, so maybe that's where all the personality, instead of like fronting bands, they're now just characters on YouTube channels. I don't know, but
yeah, but dude, they're just content creators, man. Like they're not really musicians. They're not music makers. They're using their ability to play an instrument in order to create content. Like, for example, this one drummer that I watch all the time is Estepario Siberiano, I think is his name. I probably fucked it up, but he is a really ridiculously interesting character. Like he's funny. He's ridiculously talented, and he does have a band that I don't even know who it is. I've never heard. I think he got a new band, and he's just a content creator. He's a ridiculously talented drummer. This other jazz drummer, some people are calling this guy like one of the best drummers ever, and he's not even 25 yet. Wow. But these guys are just content creators. They're not music makers, because there's more Jack and more fame in creating content than there is creating music. And so yeah, these guys are funny and they write Megadeth albums in a day, and like these drummers come on and they play really good, and like, you know, guitar, everybody is super talented, but it's only in the guise of creating content so that they can get hits on their YouTube channel. And so nobody's making music anymore. They're just creating content. And that's why music industry blows right now.
I think we're in a weird place too, where we've seen like technical virtuosity. Like, you know how they say that thing about technology?
A lot of it too.
But do you know how there's that saying, and I can't remember what it is, about how technology multiplies exponentially, right? Yeah. Do you know that? There's like an equation to it.
Yeah, yeah. It technology increases exponentially over time. And that's the same thing with musicianship right now. I have never seen so many talented musicians.
At such a young age, but I feel like they have access to secrets that were secrets when we were kids, you know, because there was that one kid on the block who could really play, but it was like proprietary information that they were never going to let out of the bag. But now, like, everybody's got the cheat codes, right? Because back when I was a kid, if you wanted guitar lessons, it cost you $100 an hour and you had to schlep down to Lentine's to get your lesson. And now it's like everybody's got the cheat codes readily available from the time they're like 4 years old. And so
I wish I knew what it was. I wish I knew what it was. So then, like, in the next week, I can like pick up a guitar and 7 days play Eruption, just like Eddie Van Halen.
One final thing. Sorry, one final thing before you move on is that the kind of like the way everything's kind of homogenized now in terms of rock, I just think so much of it is dependent on the singers, and the lack of charisma, the lack of charisma from the frontman position or front person position, and the lack of, like, they all sound alike. And this is where I think Josh Todd is correct, is that I don't hear like a new Billy Corgan. Like, you can imagine someone with a vocal that abrasive coming out now. The singer for the Pixies, these guys with like these super like abrasive vocalists who have non-traditional voices, Geddy Lee, Dave Mustaine, Neil Young, all these guys are character singers, not technically good singers, but it made their bands unique. It set their bands apart from the pack because they had someone fronting the band who offered a unique vocal. And you don't have that anymore. All these singers sound alike. They all do. I'm sorry.
That's true. It's true. You've been banging that drum for a really long time. Don't worry about being this superb vocalist. Be interesting. Sing on key and be interesting. That's all you got to do. Most importantly. Anyway, so I wasn't going to bring this up, but it's a story and it's interesting. So, you know, Ozzy was supposed to play Power Trip, right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. So, he sent a message to everybody that he just doesn't have it in him right now. He's physically not able to do Power Trip. So he backed out. And we were trying to predict, you were trying to predict, and I agreed with you actually on who we thought was going to take his place. And you said Foo Fighters, which would have been a pretty good selection actually, but they're on tour right now. And I actually agreed with you that I thought it was going to be them. It turns out that, well, let's just go over the quick rundown. We've got Guns N' Roses, Iron Maiden, AC/DC, was going to be Ozzy, Metallica, Tool, and whoever else, right? Judas Priest is replacing Ozzy. So do you have an opinion on that? I think that's, you know, considering the rest of the lineup, I think that's a pretty solid selection, don't you think?
I do think it's a solid selection. It's interesting because that puts them on the night with AC/DC, right? So that's Judas Priest, AC/DC.
That's correct. Saturday night.
I'm going to tell you, it's a better bill. I mean, Ozzy to me is like, you'd have to pay me to go see Ozzy. I mean, at this point, you really would. I would watch AC/DC and leave if Ozzy was headlining, or if Ozzy was opening, I'd show up when it was over. But I'll be honest with you, the Priest isn't much of a draw for me at their age, at Rob Halford's age. I saw them on the Ozfest 100,000 years ago, and I saw them on the Painkiller tour in like 1988. So I've seen Priest more than once. So I really wouldn't want to see them again either.
So let's do that. We did this once, but before when we did this, you said you were going to leave after AC/DC. So I'm going to change the rules on this one. So you have to pick a night, but you have to stay for both shows.
Oh.
So Friday night, Guns N' Roses and then Iron Maiden.
No.
Saturday night, AC/DC and then Judas Priest. Sunday night, Metallica and then Tool. Gotta pick one, and you gotta go to both shows. Which one?
I am going to see AC/DC and Judas Priest.
Honestly, you know what? I'm going to suffer through Metallica so that I can see Tool, because I've never seen Tool live.
Yeah, I've seen Tool twice, and they're a good show. So I think you would do well to actually attend that. I think you'd enjoy the hell out of it, to be honest with you. I think a Tool show would be right up your alley.
Yeah.
Listen, man, I heard this Power Trip thing isn't selling. And so I don't know how true that is, but I heard ticket sales are a little lame.
Light, right?
Yeah.
Well, I think the whole thing with ticket sales right now being fucking ridiculously priced, I don't think it's, I mean, yeah, you've got six really quote unquote legendary bands here, but who the hell wants to pay $1,000 to see these old fucks, right? I mean, I don't know if that's worth it, right?
Yeah, and it's also, it's also zeroed in on a certain age demographic of fan. Right. Now, and you would think older fans would have more disposable income, and that's probably true.
Well, but not when they're all living off their retirements and Social Security, because that's what they're doing right
now. Yeah. But they've targeted that demographic for ticket sales. But also, you got to bet those people are like me. We've already seen these bands. I mean, I don't have a ton of incentive to go see these bands when they're so far out of their prime.
Yep. Fact.
Not really. No, thank you.
Yep. Anyway, so enough about that. We're going to take a quick break. When we get back, we're going to talk about a band that used to be called The Mob and didn't settle on their first name, on their current band name, until they recorded their demo. So we'll be right back and we'll talk about that.
Before you go, if you like heavy metal and stories, then you'll love Battle of the Bands, the narrative form metal podcast that unpacks the biggest rivalries in rock and metal history. Season 1 took in Megadeth versus Metallica, and Season 2 went across the divide to explore the beef between Judas Priest and Iron Maiden. It's like Business Wars, but metal. Find Battle of the Bands wherever you listen to your podcasts, or visit battleofthebandspod.com.
We are gathered here to remember rock and roll. Rock was born the rambunctious son of country, western, and blues. In the year of our Lord, 1955. On this day, the birth of rock and roll gifted unto the world a gyrating pelvis, a throbbing beat, and a pulsating rhythm. A sound so infectious and rollicking that it would endow previously scrupulous young minds with identity, individualism, and purpose, thus setting forth a multi-generational pursuit of all that is loud, debaucherous, and unholy. But, sadly, like all earthly endeavors, rock too must perish. Oh, we mourn the loss of rock and roll, with its ridiculously old standard bearers still on tour and charging ungodly amounts of Mad Jack to witness their long past the sell-by date asses on stage, and with its chauvinism, misogyny, and whiteness no longer aligning with modern sensibilities, and with its aging, fist-shaking fan base, kicking every would-be rocker off their proverbial lawn, rock has indeed passed into the celestial void. May rock rest in peace, in eternal cacophonous slumber. Amen.
Thank you for that, Scott.
You are listening to the Rock and Roll Autopsy Podcast.
The Autopsy Report.
All right, gang, welcome back. We're going to be talking about Queensryche tonight. That's right. Welcome. I think one of our first real prog bands. I mean, we've mentioned Rush and yada yada, but this is our first foray into the progginess of rock and roll, I think. One of our first steps anyway. So it's Queensryche. Used to be called the Mob, Scott. They didn't really have a name when they first formed. So when they cut their demo, one of their songs on their demo, the song was called Queens of the Reich. And so they were like, oh, well, somebody suggested, why don't you just combine those words into your name? And so that's what they did. So they call themselves Queensryche. So that's where they got their name from. Anyway, this song is Operation Mindcrime from the album Operation Mindcrime. This was released in 1988. We're going to talk about the timing of this album. Recorded in 1987 through 1988. The studio was, I'm going to try and say this, KGEM Victory Studios in Pennsylvania, Le Studio Morin Heights, Quebec, Canada. The label's EMI, producer Peter Collins. So it's Operation Mindcrime, Scott, but has this song and this album been a crime to rock and roll? We'll find out.
That's a tasty transition. You know, you can only pull that off confidently after 83 episodes.
Baby.
Seamless.
And about 8,300 more to go. So we're just getting started.
Seamless transition. All right. Thank you very much. Yes, it's Rock and Roll Autopsy. Tonight on the autopsy table, we've got Queensryche, the track Spreading the Disease, off of the landmark concept album Operation Mindcrime. Rico, thank you for your autopsy report. Thank you for your tidbit about the band name. I did not know that. But before we get started, quick note from the Devotion to Accuracy department. Young man by the name of Mark from the Songs That Don't Suck podcast, a great podcast in its own right. Check it out. Corrected us that we were talking about the Rolling Stones last week and Mick Jagger's kid dancing to Guns N' Roses.
Yes.
Pretty tied up. And we were like, we were outraged. We were like,
Mick, we were Jagger. Like, how the hell can Mick Jagger's not a Guns N' Roses fan? What the he's just there just to make an appearance, right?
He doesn't. He's give a elderly. Shit about them. He's clearly just networking and dragged his 6-year-old son along. Well, turns out Guns N' Roses and turns out Guns and GNR might have done some touring together back in the Steel Wheels days. So thank you, Mark. Your podcast is terrific. Listen to it today, and as a result, checked out the band The Bites on your recommendations. So go check out Songs That Don't Suck. Yes, sir.
I mistakenly said this was Operation Mindcrime from Operation Mindcrime. My mistake. Spreading the Disease from Operation Mindcrime. Wrong song. You are correct. Spreading the Disease, not Operation Mindcrime. I had the wrong song in my brain. So correction for me.
Holy shit. The Devotion to Accuracy department is working overtime tonight.
Damn it.
Oh my gosh. Okay. All right. Listen, let's fire it up, dude. We've got proprietary science on our side. We've got five categories to determine if Spreading the Disease by Queensryche, off the record Operation Mindcrime, did in fact kill rock and roll. Category 1, gratuitous boomerism. Category 2, excessive misogyny. Category 3, wanton whiteness. Category 4, malignant machismo. And category 5, culture vulturism. Rico, we're going to do our damnedest to just talk about the song, even though it's a piece of a larger puzzle in a concept album. So I'm sure we'll wander over there a little bit, but we're going to try to stay laser focused on the song and not get in the weeds too much of the larger picture of the record. Although there will be, we'll allow for a little bit of digression.
This is a concept album and it's hard to exclusively focus on just one song when it's part of a larger story, but we'll do our best. That's why we're the professionals. That's why we do this and you guys don't, because you can't do this and we can. So just listen to us do all the work for you.
Should young children, like 7 years and younger, try this at home?
Oh my God. If they try this at home, it's akin to shaving your butt cheeks and squatting in a bucket of alcohol afterwards. That's the result of any of you out there trying to do what we do here. It's just really painful.
Have you ever engaged in any manscaping that went awire and shaved your butt cheeks?
I've never shaved. Have you shaved your butt cheeks? Please tell me you have, right? You have, right? I've never shaved my butt cheeks.
It makes your farts exponentially louder.
Oh, you mean like in the crack, like your butt crack? Like if you trim your butt crack hair, if it gets bad enough and you trim your butt crack hair, it's an easier cleanup. It's fact.
Yeah, otherwise it's like getting peanut butter out of a shag carpet.
Although if you do like have, you know, you got to be careful when you're trimming your winter bush. If you trim your winter bush down too much, then your fruit basket will stick to your legs. That's never a good thing.
It's true.
So that's no bueno.
Yeah, all this manscaping is just causing a whole different, like a whole nother area of, you know, problems being introduced. Balls stick into thighs, yeah. Farts are louder, ass gets a little sweatier. Dude, we got to do an autopsy.
Sometimes you need a little bit of hair to act as a buffer between some things that happen down there.
Yes, thank you. Category one. Spreading the disease.
Let's speaking of spreading diseases, the disease of our conversation.
Yes.
Let's reel this back in.
Let's reel it back in. Category one, Queensryche, spreading the disease, Operation Mindcrime, gratuitous boomerism. Rico, how do you score?
Yeah, dude. I'm a big fan of concept albums. But it's nobody that's not a boomer is writing concept albums. And these guys, boomers, right? Do you have it?
Boomers? I have it, and yes, they're all so far predating 1965.
Okay, clearly, because this is they would have been in their 20s in the late 80s, at least in their 20s. And on top of that, this particular song we'll get to that. I'm not going to give them a plus one on the content of the song. I want to save that for our subsequent categories. But for me, they're going to get a plus one just because it's a concept album. And that is so, I love concept albums, by the way, but it's a really kind of a boomerish thing to do, in my opinion.
Yeah, not to tip off a later category, but there's nothing more boomer or whiter than doing a concept album. And so I have to, yes,
that
I
is
check,
so true, man. So
it is true. So true. It, yes, I've checked their birthdays and they fall into the boomer category, but I'm just going to disregard that because they could be born yesterday and I'm scoring them a
matter,
plus
dude.
One because they wrote,
could be Gen Zers, but they're still going to fucking get. Yeah, dude.
Yeah. If, agree totally. If fucking Billie Eilish writes Operation Mindcrime, I'm giving her a plus one for gratuitous boomerism. So it's a hard plus one for me.
On the other hand, let's have a little quick aside about concept albums, or do you want to save that for later on? You want to save that for later? Let's save that for later. Go ahead.
All right. Well, let's move on. Category two, excessive misogyny. And yes, I've got the tab open. I have lyrics available if you need to hear them, sir.
Please, I need to hear them.
She always brings me what I need Without, I beg and sweat and bleed. When we're alone at night waiting for the call, she feeds my skin. 16 and on the run from home, found a job in Times Square working live S&M shows. $25 a fuck and John's a happy man. She wipes the filth away and it's back on the streets again, spreading the disease everybody needs but no one wants to see. Need any more, Rico?
No, I'm good because I have the lyrics in front of me. I was reading along with you. So what we have here for excessive misogyny is a former prostitute, a 16-year-old prostitute who was, again, this is the part of the story where we get introduced to the female character. Her name is, she becomes Sister Mary, right? So Father William, one of the quote unquote good guys in the story, quote unquote, there's my quote fingers. So Father William pulls Sister Mary, will become Sister Mary, pulls her off of the streets and saves her, and she becomes a nun. But Father William's fucking her on the altar anyway. So Father William's fucking her, and our protagonist, whose name is Nikki, by the way, she's having sex with him too. So she's basically brought in to take care of everybody. She's made a nun, but she's still doing the same thing that she's doing before. And I'm going to give this obviously this is a clear full on one for excessive misogyny in this song. You pull a 16-year-old prostitute off of the streets and the quote unquote priestly Father William is still having sex with her anyways. So there's nothing not misogynistic about that. So that gets a clear and obvious 1.0 from myself.
Yeah, it's interesting because one thing I love about this record, and it's, you know, and I think about this sometimes, it's going to sound bad, but I think about this sometimes with like my wife, you know, how like lives collide, lives intersect, right? And it's sometimes just by happenstance. You don't know why two people meet, right? And when their lives intersect, they impact one another's life then, right? Sometimes they don't have to be together long. Sometimes someone you just happen to, you know, becomes a part of your life for a short window of time has a massive impact on you for the rest of your days. Other times it's someone who's literally going to be a part of your life for the rest of your days, you know? And so it's just one of those cool things that like, is it chaos theory? Maybe I'm mixing my metaphors, but it's one of the cool things about this, the overarching story here is the way these two lives intersect of Nikki and Sister Mary and what becomes of the two of them, right? That is kind of the record if you think about it, you know?
That's right. They're both a mess in their own way, and they both have lots. This is to give those of you a parallel on so that you can get a grip on what we're talking about here. This is the kind of the same thing in the movie Leaving Las Vegas with Nick Cage and what's her face that was in Karate Kid.
Yeah.
She's a prostitute. He goes to Las Vegas. He goes to Las Vegas to drink himself to death because he's a really severe alcoholic, and they meet up and it's the same thing. They kind of their lives collide and they become a thing to each other, and they're both a wreck, and they don't try and solve each other's problems. They just play out their days together. So if you watch that movie, that will give you kind of the same feel as the dynamic between Mary and Nikki in this album.
So great pull, great analogy. Love it. So a couple comments from Song Meanings is some people propose that while the main purpose of this song is simply to introduce Mary to the story and to advance the story of Nikki's heroin abuse and to bring Mary in. But it also weaves in some, you know, discussion about the role of like religion and sex and capitalism and, so there's all of that kind of weaved in, especially at the tail end of the song when it gets into that, some real juicy stuff there.
Yep.
Someone had made a remark about, let me see if I can find it. Stupid internet, can't find anything when I want to find it.
Uncle Stan.
So this person says, and who is this? This is from 2022, so not too old actually. This is from Rushed. wonder if this is a Rush fan, says, this song is literally about Mary and her prostitution phase. I am not seeing much hidden unless it actually gets into the low beat with no guitar. I'm not seeing much hidden until it gets into the low beat with no guitar. The disease, I believe, is sexually transmitted and everyone pays Mary. Maybe I'm being superficial, but I thought of it as just her being paid to do it and how she was used her whole life. I mean, come on, spreading the disease that everybody needs, an STD, but no one wants to see what they've become as well as public sex. So do you think you're talking, is spreading the disease like literally they're talking about? I don't really think
no,
it's talking about
it's that. Not literal disease. It's like the disease of corrupted society.
Yes.
It's like that. It's a metaphorical disease.
Yes.
Like, don't be so literal, dude, to rush to whoever you are. that is a metaphor. The disease is the corruptiveness, like not walking the path, man, like straying and fucking your lives up and fucking other people's lives up. That's the disease.
Well, I'm going to score this, and this might surprise you, but I'm going to score it a 0.5. I'm going to go a little lighter. All right. Because while I do think it's very clear that she's being used,
yeah,
I also think it establishes her as a sympathetic character in the story. And
absolutely, for sure.
And she is kind of the heart of the story. It's hard to feel bad for Nikki, and you can't feel bad for what's his name, Dr. X or Professor X or whatever it is. And of course, Father William and the other characters are all seedy. But I do think that even with as kind of harsh as some of these lyrics are, is that she is the sympathetic figure in the whole album movie.
Hey, how about this? I thought about this the first time I listened to the album a week or two ago. So like the second part of this song talks about like religion and sex are power plays. See, that's the spreading the disease part.
Right.
Manipulate the people for the money they pay. Selling skin, selling God. The numbers look the same on their credit cards. Politicians say no to drugs while we can pay for wars in South America. So fighting fire with empty words while the banks get fat and the poor stay poor and the rich get rich and the cops get paid to look away as the 1% rules the America. Wow. 1988. Is this the first ever mention of the 1%?
Yeah. You know what? That was one of the reasons why I wanted to talk about this song, not to get into that diatribe, but it really is like, for one thing, it's just interesting how it predates kind of like what has dominated the dialogue in like the last 10, 12 years or so,
right,
you know, which has been right. Like you think of like Occupy Wall Street and all that movement that has kind of coalesced. That's talking about that 1987, you know, or 88 or whatever it is. So it's just kind of interesting how these problems, they're not new, you know, and like generations prior to the current one saw the same shit. You know what I mean? And it's just incredibly like, it's a great point. I love that you read that and took the time to read that, because it is like, it's like, holy cow, this, when you listen to the words on this record, it's just as relevant today, if not more so, you know, if you
Absolutely.
Get into, without getting too much, too tangential, listen to lyrics to Revolution Calling, just all the lyrics of this record across the board are almost more applicable or feel more applicable now than then even.
Yeah, you know, it that's so true. Like when I was listening and reading the lyrics during my experience with this album, like this album is feels out of place being released in 1988. Like musically it fits, but lyrically it feels like something that would have came out like in the 90s or the 2000s or the 10s. Like the lyrically, this could have been done at any point in the last 30 years and been completely relevant.
Love it. Let's move on. Category 3, wanton whiteness, spreading the disease, Queensryche. Rico, what say you?
Holy Christ. I mean, concept album plus one, obligatory 0.5 for being white, and the other 0.5 for it being a concept album and the fact that it's a proggy hair metal band. Not more proggy than her. There's nothing not white about this, Scott. This is clearly a 0.1.
Yeah, it's funny because
1.0, I mean.
Yeah, I'm going to score it a one as well. And it's Queensryche does get lumped into the hair thing. And I think it's an accurate kind of, if you have to box them in somewhere.
Unfortunately.
And they certainly had the look, but they were way smarter than those other bands. I mean, just way smarter. And it's really a harmful label to slap on them, but man, the look was there. And I've read different things that like the label didn't really know what to do with them. And so they were like, well, hey, Cinderella's big, so let's put you in trench coats and hairspray. You know what I mean? And you know, this kind of, but this band was so much smarter than that. I mean,
especially during this part of the 80s, when like we talked about this before in a previous episode, where at this point in the 80s, like the music industry was so saturated with hair bands that this they just got lumped in with the rest of them.
Yeah, it's absolutely right. Yep. But for me, I got to score it a one as well. This is a concept album. For lack of a better term, it's a hair band from the late 80s. It's just some white ass shit. I'm sorry, America. Okay. Let's move on. Category 4, malignant machismo. This could be tricky. What say you, Rico?
I'm gonna give this, man. On one hand, this song, like we said before, on one hand, this song introduces you to the heart of the story in Mary, right? So there's nothing really machismo about that. But when you get to the, you know, the name of the song is Spreading the Disease, and I think that they use the introduction of Mary in order to segue into what they really want to say in this song, which is in the later part of the song. That's where they true. Talk about where they talk about the one percenters. And so from that perspective, once again, wow, breaking the fourth wall. How about this? Once again, Mary gets used because she, like, the band is using Mary in order to say what they really want to say. So not only is Father William using her, and not only is Nikki using her, but the band is also using her. So I was only going to do a 0.5, but I got to roll it up to a one on that one.
They're just using, Mary to, as a vehicle to get their political statement out there.
Holy Christ. I mean, she's just getting fucking bashed all right around. I feel bad for her.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, I don't know what to make of this in terms of, because I think Jeff Tate is one of the most underrated singers. I just think his vocal performance on this record is just,
it's pretty damn good, right?
Amazing. Yeah. And there's a great clip from, they did a live, they used to play this record live in its entirety, and I think they put out a DVD of the live performance, and they called it
Operation Live Crime.
Yeah,
they called it.
Well, there's a great section on that where they do the song, it's kind of the centerpiece of the record, the song Sweet Sister Mary, the big ballad in the middle with all of the funeral dirge music. And then Mary actually has vocal parts on that. It's the true rock opera portion should be noted. This record goes full blown rock opera at that point. Sure. It's literally crossing over into Queen territory, but his vocal performance on that, when he's singing with her live, and I mean, he is like not only singing it and nailing everything, but his body like twists and contorts, and he's like embodying the character of Nikki. It's like he's actually portraying the character on stage. And so it's like, I mean, just like you watch that and you were just blown away by like how talented he is as a vocalist. It's just, the stage presence is just off the charts. But
right, and this is kind of where Styx failed with Mr. Roboto, which we talked about, where Styx fails with Mr. Roboto, Queensryche absolutely blows it out of the water in Operation Live Crime when they do this live, for sure.
Because you have to be able to sell it, right?
Yeah, and they certainly do.
So this track, I don't know.
It's a toughie, man. I mean, I felt, not to interrupt you, but I felt like I had to go full one just because of like everybody's hammering her. Even the band is using her in order to manipulate that to get their real story out, which is about the one percenters. And that is some fucking macho bullshit, in my opinion. So, I mean, you can score it whatever you want, but it's a toughie, man. I get how you're struggling with it. I do.
And it reminds me too, a little bit of where you have the song and then you have the back half of the song, which is like the spoken word part where the political rant happens. And in that way, he almost becomes Bono. Suddenly it's Bullet the Blue Sky right. from U2. Yeah, right, and he's going to go off on a political diatribe, you know, in the latter half. You know what, dude, I think I'm going to score it a 0.5 with full acknowledgement of Mary being absolutely railroaded by these macho motherfuckers at this point.
Got it. I like it.
Let's move on. Category 5, our last category. The listeners are on the edge of their seats. Mark is furiously taking notes, trying to figure out where to correct us on Twitter.
Oh, I know. Like, he's going to get his fucking red pen out and start hammering us for all of our inaccuracies. He's going to start keeping tally of all the shit that we said wrong. Thanks, Mark. Look forward to it, buddy.
We love you, Mark. Enjoy the hamburger station.
We love you. Exactly. I agree. Right. Hamburger station rocks.
Culture vulturism, Queensryche, spreading the disease. Rico, what say you?
Yeah, I mean, normally at this point in the 80s, I might, you know, score them for a little vulturism for being a part of the hairband movement. But this album is so fucking smartly done, and it's so well done. And the story from top down is so well done, and to be able to pull off this kind of a concept album in the late 80s, nobody was doing concept albums in the late 80s. I think the last real concept album was probably Mr. Roboto, right?
Yeah.
Like, was there anything after them? And that was like
trying
early
to
80s.
Think.
I don't think anything. So to rip off, to go through almost the rest of the decade and then in 88 pull off this quality of a concept album, and to boot, when I hear this album, I hear a lot of Dream Theater in this album. I totally get how Dream Theater is clearly influenced by Queensryche. It's obvious, because to me, this is like Dream Theater without the gymnastics. This is early pre-Jordan Rudess Dream Theater without the gymnastics is Queensryche, in my opinion. So for me, this is a zero, because they influenced Dream Theater. They successfully pulled off a concept album in 1988. So there's nothing vulturistic about that. That's an out of the box way of thinking. And I can't penalize them for that. So that's a zero.
Yeah. I really, the way you articulated that is you're kind of stealing my thoughts. It's a zero for me as well. I think I could, if I wanted to really be nitpicky, I could say there are moments on this that sound like they're kind of lifted right from like the wall. Like there's a couple moments.
Oh,
like,
sure.
Like right when, spoiler alert, when Mary dies, the little brief instrumental track there where he's kind of realizing, you know, and he finds her, and
sounds
there's
like
it's I don't remember the exact track, but it sounds like they're quoting like the wall musically, like verbatim.
I thought of that, and there was one musical section. Oh God, I had it when I was listening to it. I picked out the exact part of the exact song, and I said, "That's the wall."
Yeah,
and the other part of the wall is at the very end where they loop it around to the beginning.
Yes, yes. So there are, I think, some nods, and Queensryche has at times in their career been compared to Pink Floyd. The Silent Lucidity, people say, is, you know, a little too close to Hey You by Pink Floyd. And, you know, so they've kind of walked that line. So, and there are moments on this that I'm not going to use the word derivative, because I don't want to disrespect the, I think this album is too it's almost too stunning an accomplishment to deride it with a term as negative as trying to call it derivative. But there are some, I'll say, just little quotes of Pink Floyd in there. But totally, I'm going to score it a zero for culture vulturism. All right, Rico, let's wrap it up, man. What do you got, buddy?
All right, I've got 3, 4. I've got 4.0, dude. 4.0.
And I've got 3. For a grand total of
7 points. Close, but they did not kill rock. They're on the higher end of, but they fall in the category of no effect on rock either way.
I think they're
almost as close.
I think it skews high because of the song selection. I think if we landed somewhere else in this track, in this track listing on this record, it's because this song is extra spicy, you know, in terms of how it hits on some of these categories.
This is probably one of the spiciest songs, maybe not the spice, but it's definitely one of the spiciest songs. So I think you are right on why it skews a little high.
I think we did a nice job of keeping it on topic without getting too tangential off into like Operation Mindcrime land. But I would like to say I'm not the biggest Queensryche fan in the world. Fun fact, the first time I got laid, a Queensryche song was playing in the background and it did not finish before I did. But I like a smattering of songs throughout their catalog, but this record I love top to bottom, literally from track 1 to 15. I can put this thing on, play it all the way through. I think I love the storytelling. We talked about The Wall, and The Wall can be a little hard to wrap your mind around at times. I think the storytelling is like super tight and linear in this. It's not super metaphorical, so it's kind of down the middle a little bit with its storytelling. But I think this record is just a gargantuan, Godzilla-sized, Herculean achievement. In my opinion, I think this is like an absolute 10 out of 10 record. I don't think there's a bad track on it. I think it's just so well put together, top to bottom.
And I agree. The only Queensryche song I had ever listened to before this album was Silent Lucidity, and never did I ever go out of my way for it. It was just whenever I heard it on TV or radio. So I obviously know who Queensryche is. First time I've ever listened to anything besides something I heard involuntarily, and I completely agree with you. And the ability to pull, listen, man, it's hard. I don't care what decade it is. It's hard to do a good concept album. It's hard. There aren't very many good ones out there. There are plenty of them, but a lot of them suck. The Elder, but there are, it's hard. It's hard to do a good one. And especially in this style of music, to do a hair bandy concept album and to pull it off successfully in 1988, that's a fucking win, dude. Like, this is a ridiculously high achievement for them. So kudos to the band. Everything you said is correct. I agree 100%. This is a great album. It's successfully pulled off. Well done.
Yeah, it's like the risk you take, because if you fail on a concept album, it becomes like The Elder is a great pull. Judas Priest did it a couple years after Rob Halford got back in the band. They did one. Maybe we'll talk about it someday. It's called Nostradamus. It was a spectacular failure. It was embarrassing, because when you swing that hard, you step up to the plate and swing that hard and miss, it's a real bad look, man. It doesn't look good on you. But you know, props to them. Very difficult thing
for sure. For sure. Absolutely. All right.
Well, thanks for listening to Rock and Roll Autopsy. Because we did Queensryche tonight, everybody got to hear about me losing my virginity. Isn't that great?
I know I enjoyed it. I mean, how far into the album did you make it? Like, did you at least make it past that first little 1 minute track at the beginning?
Well, it was a cassette at the time, and it was And I do remember the song. It was off of Rage for Order. It was Gonna Get Close to You, I think, is the title of the song. Oh, wow.
How romantic.
I think it's a 3-minute track. I'm not entirely sure, but I don't think I survived. I don't think I got through the first verse.
It was a cassette. Did you voluntarily put that on, or did the other person put it on, or was it just on?
Did you
go out of your way for this? Were you thinking, like, I'm going to put some fucking Queensryche on? This is going to set the stage, man. It's going to give me the vibe that I want. And then I'm going to fucking lay the wood to some Queensryche, baby. Was that what you were thinking the whole time?
Some dudes put on Barry White, and me, I reached for a Queensryche cassette. No, dude. As bad as this sounds, don't really remember. I have a terrible memory, and I don't really remember the details of the moment. I really don't. I probably should, but I just remember the song, and I don't really remember much else.
Did you manscape before you
that wasn't a thing back then. And besides, you're so happy to be growing pubes back then. The last thing you're going to do is lop them off, you know?
Like, you want to throw it out because it's more impressive back then.
Yeah, it's new. You've just now gone through puberty. You're all excited about it. You're like, wow, I did it. I did it.
Hair on my balls. Like, I got hair up, and you're showing everybody, right? You ever show anybody your ball hair when you were younger?
Sure, everybody did. Yeah. You're always whipping your balls out. It's just something you did on the playground as a kid. Set them on the desk in study hall.
You're fucking, dude, when you're like just getting ball hair, you're fucking teabagging everything just because you're like manly now and you can
stick them in a whip bun and try to hand a hot dog to the girl next to you in the cafeteria.
I would pay money to watch you do that, Scott. I really would.
Oh my god. All right, well, another podcast I hope my wife never listens to.
Oh shit.
All right, gang, it's been Rock and Roll Autopsy. We'll see you next week. Good night. Now
let me have that special rock and roll music. Yeah.
Let me tell you, so the lyrics to real rock music is nothing more than satanic cyanide. Get it out of your house, throw it out, and burn it. It has no place in the house of the righteous.
You guys, it was like a mistake. There's no mistake anymore.
Follow us on Twitter at RNRAutopsy, or you can send an email to rockandrollautopsy@gmail.com, and if we run across anything good, we'll mention it in a future episode. Thanks for listening. Later.
Well, you know, that's just like your opinion, man.